Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure and Julia Fellow.
All right, thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday. Hope your weekend was great. Hope the work week has gotten off to a good start. Pretty decent weekend, weather-wise. Pretty nice day today. It sounds like it could get dicey later on after dinner. WTMJ meteorologist Craig Copeland, our guy, is with us. Craig, how are you? How was the weekend?
It was great. I had the whole family in town, all three daughters, their significant others, three grandkids.
Wow.
It was a great weekend.
I love that.
Wow.
That's really, really good. And you had a good weekend for it, too. It was pretty pleasant.
It was fantastic. We spent some time outside on the patio, took the boys golfing. We ducked in and out of the lower air quality areas at the times when the air quality was down. So we spent some indoor time as well, but all in all, fantastic.
So, Craig, I guess let's start with the weather that could be coming tonight. As I look at the radar right now, north and west of Madison, there's some stuff developing. What are you looking at as we head into dinner time?
So it's interesting. There's a cold front that's just starting to push into western Wisconsin. It has started to produce thunderstorms in Iowa and southwest Wisconsin, and that area is under a tornado watch. That area is from La Crosse south to around Prairie du Chien, Platteville, and Dubuque. There is another part of Wisconsin also under a tornado watch. And that's northeast Wisconsin, from around Appleton over to Stevens Point and north. So both of those areas are where either thunderstorms that may produce tornadoes are going on already or are expected to develop. There is no tornado watch or any watch of any kind in southeast Wisconsin for now. And that's going to be the big question here as the evening goes on. Will these two areas that are seeing the initial storms sort of link up across central Wisconsin and then come down into the Milwaukee area? We're going to have to wait and see on that. It would be between 7 and 11 p.m. that we would get storms if that scenario plays out. But it's not a sure thing. It's possible that these two separate areas of storms sort of stay separate and miss the Milwaukee area. That's something we're going to watch closely the next couple hours.
You know, some of the meteorologists, including you, are saying that it's dependent on the sunshine. Why?
That's right. So we need sunshine. We need warm weather to create instability in the atmosphere. When it gets real warm down here, the warm air wants to rise, right? We all know warm air rises. And so the hotter it gets, the more the air rises and the faster it rises. And when the air rises fast, it cools once it gets several thousand feet up in the air, and that leads to thunderstorms. So we have gotten a fair amount of clearing after the clouds we had this morning. So we've warmed up pretty well. Just about all of the state has warmed up pretty well, and that's why we're starting to see the storms start to pop here and there. Whether they pop in a area that they're tracked will move it into the Milwaukee area, that's the question. If they do, I'm very confident that they're going to be severe. I'm confident we're going to have hail and high winds and that sort of thing. But if they, whether they miss us or not is still an open question.
All right, Craig, quick question about the smoke. It was pretty bad last week. Could this be a harbinger for what the rest of the summer looks like off and on?
Not necessarily. And in fact, other than a little bit of an uptick late tonight, the smoke intensity could go up into early in the day tomorrow. But then we're going to have the one front cold front come through and then a second cold front come through midday tomorrow. And that's going to clear things out for a time. And then beyond that, in terms of ongoing smoke, the question is how many ongoing fires will there be? Will there be through the rest of the summer? Of course, that's really difficult to predict.
Meteorologist Craig Copeland, always good to have you. Thank you so much, Craig.
Happy to be with you.
Terrible story from last night. An 84-year-old guy is on his bike. He's on Kilbourne, and apparently we're led to believe in the bike lane. A bus turns into him. There's a collision. And he dies at the scene. WTMJ's Adam Roberts has been looking into the story a little bit, and he's a biker, so we wanted his perspective. and he's with us in the studio. What a terrible story.
Yeah, absolutely. I caught wind of this pretty late yesterday. It happened around 8:30, and as you mentioned, I am a daily bike commuter. I've not been shy about that, I think, but I think it's important to mention that every time because that is how I get around. And this intersection they're talking about near Cathedral Square, it's on the northeast side of the park. It's an awkward area. Just if you don't know, there's a protected bike lane on Kilbourne that goes all the way to the west over to 6th Street. It's very long. It's separated by those plastic pillars. It's not like a concrete lane the whole way. But it ends right here at this intersection. The lane kind of goes in a little bit because there's that sort of divided boulevard that Kilbourne is towards the lakefront. And so the lanes that are protected and separate from the road end right here. Now, I don't want to speculate as to where the biker was, if they were in the lane as they should be. But we see sometimes bikers are on the sidewalks or in other areas. But it does look like this bus, a go right way, coach bus was turning to the right, maybe was heading down where Jefferson is a one way going off towards like downtown and 794. And that's where this happened. It was 8:30, so it wouldn't have been super dark out, maybe towards sunset at that point. Still a lot of unknowns. We also don't know the identity of the cyclist other than that they were 84 years old and a male. But yeah, just adding some of that context, it's a route I ride all the time. I intentionally take routes because the city has expanded their protected bike lanes in recent years, especially in the downtown area. It's sort of a pockmark. You got to kind of jump around to where all of them are. It's not uniform, but this is part of my everyday as I go up to Van Buren and take that PBL. So I'm very familiar with the intersection and have had, at least on one occasion I can remember, a scenario where I had to kind of shout, hey, at someone who was about to make a similar turn. So these are things that I think about and people who are out biking are thinking about as well.
So Adam, this is near Cathedral Square Park.
Mm-hmm.
Am I accurate?
Yep, northeast corner.
Okay, so this person was turning right. Do you know exactly where that pinch point might be? Could you picture that happening?
Yeah, it's right at the stoplight. So this is, you know, right, you have the sidewalk, you have where cars used to park before it was a protected lane, and that's where the lane is now. And then, yeah, it juts out to your left if you're going that way east. And then it kind of, the road is running along right where the lane kind of juts out towards.
So
there is that kind of
right,
weird pinch point.
If it's turning right, maybe the bicyclist didn't even notice that it was getting
And hit. It can happen so fast,
yeah.
Too. I mean, if you're turning right, you're not always looking for people out there who aren't maybe right in that pedestrian crosswalk, but it is something you have to think about. I know there are cities like Madison's an example where there are separate bike signals, like traffic lights for bikes specifically to say, hey, it's your turn to go versus the car's turn to go. Kind of wish we had those here.
How do you feel about this?
Well, you know, it's things you think about. I mean, I'm not going to stop biking around. That's how I commute. We're a one-car household. My wife drives the car because she works in the burbs. And I work in the city, so it's not going to stop me from commuting, but it is just yet another example of you always got to bike defensively and be aware of everything around you, and you'd wish it'd go the other way, too.
WTMJ's Adam Roberts. Thanks, Adam.
You bet.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News on WTMJ.
All right, World Cup is in the books. Did you watch the game?
Just...
kind of.
The first 21 minutes.
Okay. Well, the second 21, the third 21, and the fourth 21 were all the same. Nobody scored.
Awful.
Did you watch a halftime show?
I did. I watched it back. Why wasn't it all live? Why was Madonna in this like tunnel and it's
pre-taped?
That was terrible.
Okay, so terrible. Here is Madonna. I liked the choice of the song. I liked the song of hers, music from her 2000 album, but I agree with you. It was weird at the beginning, wasn't it? The thing in the fake car.
What's happening?
I just didn't quite understand that. Here's the other thing. You're 68 years old. Stop
Whoa.
Acting like a stripper.
Really?
I don't like that. I don't want to see nasty Madonna like crouching and grinding. And no, do we have to see that?
Shakira was really good.
Okay. Yep. I'm going to get to... All right. Let's do Shakira because Shakira was the highlight.
Adorable. You've been
And it's a fact. Those hips don't lie. I mean, amazing, remarkable.
She's not young either.
She's younger than Madonna. Me and 105 were texting back and forth about her outfit. I mean, it was. You okay over there? You getting excited about Shakira?
Yeah, she's 49. I'm sorry, I just spilled.
She looks incredible, doesn't she? She is really, really the real deal. So Shakira getting rave reviews for her performance. And the official, the song she did was the official FIFA song, Die Die. Yeah, that was the song with Burna Boy. So that was the guy that was out there with her. I just have three words to describe Shakira's performance. Yes, yes, yes.
Beautiful. It was wonderful. She had little kids by her, too. She looked like she was having a good time.
Yeah, she did. She's got a cool vibe,
so
right?
Pretty.
She's got great energy. Okay, you know who didn't have, you know who really did not have good energy?
All right, young man, let's go.
Okay.
Big shot.
Well, this part's okay.
Okay. Now listen to me.
This is Ted Lasso introducing Justin Bieber.
Nobody's watching. All right? Make us proud.
Okay. Then this happened.
That was live, at least.
Bieber looked like he was homeless with a guitar and couldn't find a razor anywhere, apparently.
Good morning. Curtains dancing.
What is that? We're all pumped up. We're jacked. We got Madonna, Shakira.
Mm.
And I felt like I was at a wake with Justin Bieber started to sing.
And we don't have to go to
what is this?
Did you like this?
Baby.
Julia, great point. Like, why didn't he sing that? Why didn't he sing one of his old hits?
The vibes were way off.
If you're at the FIFA World Cup and you're singing a song that has Hallelujah in the title and you look like you're imitating Bill Belichick with that crap hoodie on, what are you doing? I just
He had Nate's shoes on, too.
And Shakira had no shoes on. Yeah.
She didn't have any shoes on.
Yeah, she was barefoot. Her and all the dancers.
Mm-hmm.
I like how you brought it back to Shakira. That's a great idea. There. That's what they should have done. But did you hear the music end? They should have done that halfway through a set at the actual show.
It killed the whole audience.
They should have just crashed it.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News on WTMJ. Now batting for the Brewers Radio Network, play-by-play announcer Lane Grindle.
I think I know where you're going, and it's pretty innovative.
One, two, pitch. Is a fly ball. Deep center field. Marcy's back. Trap. Wall. Boy. Baseball.
Yeah, let's go! Man, Lane had me just scream. I almost drove my car off the road. Lane's enthusiasm is contagious. He's with us from the ballpark. Lane, what a great call. What a great day yesterday, huh?
Yeah, that was a fun day. Just you get some moments like that over the course of the season. You don't know when they're going to come, but you just felt like if the Brewers could keep it 1-0, that they'd get their shot eventually in that game, and it came with two outs remaining in the game. But William Contreras, a player for the dramatic and a great sweep for the Brewers. I mean, when you looked at the pitching probables going into the weekend, to see the three guys that the Marlins were going to throw at the Brewers coming out of the break to take all three, that's a great accomplishment for this club.
All right, let's talk about the Miz, because he's pitching tonight. People have been a little nervous, and, you know, the manager and others close to the team have said, look, we're just going to give him a couple days, and now he's throwing tonight. Is this really just that we're going to kind of manage his pitch count and innings as we head through the rest of the year?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, this is the responsible thing to do. They need to do it. He's, I think, 20 innings away from blowing past his number from last year from the minors and majors combined. And so he's going to go past that number by a lot this year. And so you have to be careful. You want to try to manage him the best you can. I think it's reasonable to push him past that number. But some breaks here, some extra days here and there, that's, I think, the responsible thing to do. This is a very, very important part of the Milwaukee Brewers organization, not just this year, but for years moving forward. So you want to make sure you have a healthy Miz, because a healthy Miz is not a guaranteed win, but it's the closest thing there is to it right now in baseball.
Does it also kind of teach him in this moment, you know, going to the All-Star game, but missing, you know, even playing at all, and then the Marlins and the Pirates game, does this kind of teach him to also, for him to know when I should go out of the game?
Well, I think to answer that question, Julia, there is a process for a young player of understanding their body, understanding what their limitations are, and just communicating with the staff and with the training staff. And I think that open dialogue and that constant communication and feedback back and forth is really important. So he's gotten good at that over the last year or so. I'm not sure how great he was at that when he first came up. There was a lot of things about Niz in the first couple of months where he's figuring it out at the big league level, the consistency, throwing strikes, and probably communicating with the staff when he was out of gas. All those things. There's Jeff Levering. Look at him right here. Jeff Levering.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Lebo.
He can't hear you. I have headphones in, but he says hello. Jeff says hello. Here he comes. Here he comes. He's going to say hi.
Hey, there he is.
So all those things are important for every young player, and I think we've seen that this year, that Niz knows when he has more, and he'll let him know, like we saw in Colorado. And there's been other times where he's had a cramp here or there at the end of a start, or even just knew, look, I emptied the tank in the last inning. It's time for my night to be over. I think that's an important part of the process for a young player, and Miz is really done a nice job of that this year.
Lane, what do you think the chances are the Brewers pick up more help? They've already made one move, which could really benefit the club. What do you think the chances are they pick up more help in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think that they will. What it is, I don't know. I think they'll look at starting pitching. I think they'll look at relief pitching for sure. You'll always take a look at a bat if there's something out there. So I think I've covered about everything with those three categories. But I do think that they'll take a look at whatever they can to help this team. But again, it takes the other side to agree to a deal. And so you just don't know. The problem right now with the trade deadline is that because of the expanded playoffs, you have so many teams that are in it, and there are just fewer teams that are willing to sell and more teams that are looking to acquire. And what does that do? I mean, it's economics, right? It drives up the price. So you have to give up a lot to get something that's really going to move the needle for your team. The Brewers have a lot to give up if they wanted to, but that has not been how they have operated in the past. They have valued their prospects. They have valued their young talent, their controllable talent. And I think they'll move some stuff to get something back, but I couldn't give you a great guess at what exactly that'll be yet.
Lane Grindle, Brewers broadcaster. Check him out tonight here on WTMJ. Lane, we always appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
What a week it was last week. So Sarah Rodriguez announces, I got a little bit of a problem. Sarah Rodriguez announces, I'm out of the race. David Crowley is back in the race. He is now once again running for governor in the Democratic primary in Wisconsin. And David's with us live in the studio. Good to see you. Thanks for being here, David.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on with John and Julia. J&J, huh?
Oh, I like that. The J&J show. So we heard the story at your announcement about your wife, and she asked for a sign, and she got the sign, and you got back into the race. I want to ask you about the step before that. So as people started to reach out to you and started to call you, and you had to go to Erica, your wife, and say, honey, I think this maybe is something we should think about. What was her initial reaction to you getting back in?
It was absolutely not, to be honest with you. I mean, when you think about running for governor, also still have three daughters, doing the county exec work. I mean, it has been taxing, and I love my wife, and she understands the sacrifice that we make as a family to do the work on the behalf of the community. So in the very beginning, it was absolutely not. And we continued to say that until we decided to pray, and she received her sign.
She saw a cardinal, John.
Yeah.
Fly right in front of her office.
Pretty cool.
All right. So what was the thought process of you stepping down and dropping out at first? Was it because of that $1 million buy that Rebecca Rodriguez was going to have? And now we realize she only raised about $35,000, and you raised hundreds of thousands of dollars more? Is it because you thought you weren't raising as much as her?
Well, I would say that, you know, when you look at the totality of the field, I was looking at what all the candidates had and what we were doing. And so, you know, after talking with my wife, it was like, is the path really there? And so when you're seeing these numbers come from the campaigns, you know, you trust these numbers, right? And so, unfortunately, what happened to our lieutenant governor is extremely disappointing, to be quite honest with you. I was extremely angry. When everything happened, right, and I'll be honest, like the lieutenant governor called me the Sunday night before her announcement. And was I disappointed, upset? Absolutely. But I told her, I'm still behind you. You know, I understand when you have people working for you how sometimes these things can happen, but let's just make sure that there's no more surprises moving forward. And so I'm still going to back you. But when she made the announcement, that's when I started getting more phone calls and more phone calls and more phone calls to get back into this race. But we didn't make the decision until Friday, you know, and, you know, we prayed about it and, you know, it was, and now we're here, you know. And what's interesting is that who would have thought that that would have came with a Governor Evers endorsement? And since the announcement and the rally that we had Saturday, we have seen tremendous amount of support across the entire state. A lot of grassroots supporters, the fundraising, everything has increased within the past week. And so I'm looking forward to riding this momentum all the way through August 11th.
I'm sure you sought Governor Evers' endorsement much earlier in the process. It didn't come. He didn't endorse anybody. Why now? Why didn't he endorse you initially if now you're his guy?
You know, you would have to ask the governor on why he waited this long. Would I would have wanted it earlier? Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I'm not sure exactly why the governor made this decision. But, you know, to have a governor who has not only run, but he's won statewide office, ran for statewide office and has governed. And so to have his confidence in my judgment, in my leadership, it means a lot. And so I know that just giving the governor's endorsement doesn't mean it's going to be a cakewalk. I have to earn every single support across this state, and that's what I look forward to doing.
To be out and then back in within maybe a week or so?
9 days.
Okay, what is your mind, your body, everything going through?
It was a whirlwind. Let's just be honest with you. I mean, you think about all the emotions of being sad, being angry, being disappointed, but also kind of like the excitement of, you know, I'm going to enjoy the rest of my summer. I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, this is another sacrifice getting back into this race, you know, because I'm telling people, all those who are listening, please buy travel insurance because we booked a trip to Jamaica that I'm no longer going to be able to go on. And so it's a ball of emotions in its totality. But I know we made the right decision where we are today. I feel really good. I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm elated. But it's also channeling all those other emotions that I felt within the past week into the type of passion, the fire that we need on behalf of all Wisconsinites. Because at the end of the day, you know, being a Democratic nominee, it's not about these candidates. It's not about me at all. It's about the people of Wisconsin. And ultimately, our goal is to defeat whoever the Republican nominee will be this upcoming November.
David Crowley is with us in the studio. So Mandela Barnes is trashing you. He said David Crowley left this race for a reason. He and his allies spent nearly $1 million, gained no traction. Did you have a conversation with Mandela Barnes about the possibility of him dropping out of the race?
I've never had that conversation with any candidate, to be honest with you. And I know that people try to say that I've tried to push candidates out, but I don't think that you should be asking any candidate, right, what you think they should be doing in their own race. And so Mandela, Fran, Joel, Kelda, you know, they have their own decisions to make when it comes down to their campaign. And you know, while he may be trashing me and while I left this campaign, I came back for a reason. I came back to win this upcoming August. So
how do you keep track of your ledger? And how often do you look at how much you raised, how much is going out and going in with your campaign?
Well, I have direct access to the programs that we use when it comes down to fundraising. So actually, while I'm making phone calls, I see my numbers in real time. So I know exactly what we're bringing in and what we have spent. But it's not just me, right? It's making sure that you have those checks and balances. So you have my campaign manager, the deputy campaign manager, and all those there to make sure that they're doing their due diligence. And so, you know, especially after what happened this past week, I think everybody's paying attention to their home campaign finance reports.
So if Sarah Rodriguez were to endorse you, would you embrace it? Would you campaign with her? Would you stand with her on a stage?
Oh, I mean, yes, I would. You know, I think the lieutenant governor, you know, she's a stand-up woman. You know, she is a nurse by background. She has done a lot for the state of Wisconsin as lieutenant governor. And she's done a lot as a state representative, right? Flipping, you know, a deep red seat in Waukesha, you know, into a blue seat. And so I have a lot of respect for her. And, you know, honestly, like, I'm also upset for her, right? I'm also disappointed for her because of the way that this all went down, because she was on the rise, you know, within the past a few weeks, few months, if you will. And so I would welcome that. But I think she needs her space right now, right? With all that has happened, you know, it's about making sure that, you know, if she decides to get involved, I want to make sure she's in the right place, because you have to take care of yourself especially when you're involved in politics. And a lot, all of the vitriol we now see, you know, online coming from different places on both sides of the aisle. So you just got to give some people their space. But I will absolutely welcome it.
We're talking to the Milwaukee County executive and gubernatorial candidate for governor, David Crawley. So if you became governor, you would also be breaking a huge barrier. You would be the first black governor of Wisconsin. And you just came from Hank Aaron, the event, and he was going to break Babe Ruth's home run record, he got a lot of flack, a lot of racism towards him. So how big of a deal is it for you as a black man to run for governor and possibly run the state?
You know, that's a great question, you know, because it means a lot to me personally, but I also know what it means to the rest of this community, right? When you think about the city of Milwaukee specifically, black communities in Madison, Beloit, Racine, Kenosha, Green Bay, all across the entire state, I know they look at me and say, you know, thank you for being the example. Thank you for being, you know, the motivation to me. And for me, my goal is to just do the work. You know, I always say my job is not to be the first. My job is to make sure I'm not the last. You know, I remember when I became the first African-American county executive and the youngest at 33. And it can take a huge toll on you. It makes you feel like you have this level of imposter syndrome almost, you know. But, you know, I was able to navigate because I got business coaching and I was able to talk to my mentors and talk to people outside of the state of Wisconsin who don't have the, you know, the political perspective that we have here to basically get a better understanding of how to make decisions. And so, you know, when I think about being the first African-American to be elected, first black man to be elected as the governor of the great state of Wisconsin, it's not lost on me. But that's not why I'm here. You know, this is about how do we make sure that we can fully invest in our public schools across the entire state, right? How do we make sure that we are holding data centers accountable? How do we make sure that people can make a fair wage, be able to afford to live in their home and be able to afford their groceries or gas at the pump? Like, those are the things that really matter throughout this race. And those are the things that I want to focus on. But I also know that history, you know, we can't make history with this race, but that's not the goal. And if we do make history, it's because we won by a landslide, I'm hoping.
So some polling shows Francesca Hong in the top spot. Is she too liberal? Is she too left? Is she too non-traditional for Wisconsin?
You know, I think we're having the wrong conversations, right? Because, you know, whether we're talking about on a Democratic Party side or on the Republican Party side, like, we all have different factions. Right. And I think that right now our job is to figuring out, yes, you can support your candidate, but we still have to unite at the end of the day after August 11th to make sure that we are moving forward. And so for me, I'm in this race because I have the judgment. I have the receipts as far as what I've done leading the largest county in the state of Wisconsin, and the fact that we've built statewide coalitions and worked with the Republican legislature to bring resources back to Milwaukee in every community. This shouldn't be about how far left, how far right. This is about who's going to be able to do the job on day one, because Wisconsin are going to be facing a lot of challenges, whoever the next governor is.
David Crawley is the Milwaukee County Executive and a Democratic candidate for governor. We appreciate it, David. Thank you so much for making some time for us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.